Wheel of Thought began spinning. Yep. Something? When I was talking to Earl, he mentioned a Glock 22 in Kiddo's past. Something about a lawnmower. You're kidding.
Nope. As I recall, he shot his neighbor's lawnmower with a 40 Glock.
She finished off the rest of her Bloody Mary with a strong pull and then set the glass down between us. Are we really going to go dig up some guy's lawn? I gathered my jacket from the back of my chair and looked down at her. After I take a nap, we go have a chat with Billy V himself.
Where are you taking your nap? Henry has one bed and Doc has the other.
Probably in Lola.
She shrugged, getting up after me.
Why not?
It appears to be where everyone else is sleeping these days.
There wasn't much human traffic, so we made quick time to the Hewlett Motel's parking lot.
I opened the door to the vintage convertible and looked at the center console in the front and then at the back seat, which didn't look nearly as big as I'd remembered.
I don't think I'm going to fit.
She glanced in the back, spotting the Cheyenne Nation's blanket, and then in the passenger seat she saw the annotated Sherlock Holmes.
Grab the blanket and book, and we'll go down by the river and have a picnic.
I retrieved the supplies and shut the door.
We don't have any food.
No, but I can read, and you can put your head in my lap.
Sold.
Did you know that Doyle almost named Holmes Sherrinford?
In some of the early drafts. But he settled on Sherlock because of a cricket player he remembered. I kept my eyes closed, knowing full well that opening them would only encourage her.
Did you know the first novel, A Study in Scarlet, was a flop?
Yep, but the second was a hit after Joseph Stoddard convinced both Doyle and Oscar Wilde to serialize stories for his Lippincott's monthly magazine. The Picture of Dorian Gray was the only novel Wilde ever wrote.
Does the name Sherlock mean anything?
Fair-haired. I listened as she flipped a page. Second most filmed fictional character?
Sherlock Holmes.
There was a long pause as she puzzled on something that wasn't annotated in the book suspended above my head.
Who the hell is first?
Dracula. I opened my eyes and looked up at her.
Hey, I thought I was supposed to be taking a nap.
Who's stopping you?
You?
Yeah, I guess I am.
She closed the book and set it aside.
An arrogant, drug-addicted sociopath. Why do you suppose the character has been so popular through the years?
His perfect humanity.
Her face dropped to look at me.
Explain.
He's flawed, but he has an encyclopedic mind and relies on the human element of uncanny intuition. So when the scientific method runs amok, he uses his brain. Contrary to popular belief, the method Holmes uses is abduction, not deduction. Abductive reasoning is based on conclusions drawn from observation, whereas deduction is a conclusion drawn from available data and is always true.
I thought Sherlock Holmes is never wrong.
That would be a dreadful disadvantage to a true detective.
You have to always be ready to rethink your abductions in the face of the evolving information in any case.
Elementary, my dear Longmire?
He never said that in a single story or novel.
I rose up and supported myself with a stiff arm.
How long was I asleep? Less than you want to know.
I guess I'm done.
We stood, and I shook off the blanket, folded it, and placed it under my arm.
Any sign of Henry?
She closed the book and glanced around.
Nope. Must still be asleep in the room.
I guess we'll leave Dog with him then and head over to the police station to have a chat with Billy.
Sounds like a charmer.
We started toward the T-Bird.
Oh, he is.
What do you mean he's gone?
Made bail, so he's scot-free.
How?
Somebody moved up the bail schedule and the judge ruled him a low flight risk in that he's a business owner and a celebrity.
What about the fact that that business is in another state? As well as the assault with a deadly weapon on a peace officer.
The judge let that one slide because of the previous cease and desist that said you weren't supposed to be within 100 feet of him. Not true about the rest. Vic sat on the edge of Corbin's desk. What was bail?
The patrolman smiled.
$250,000? Wowza!
I guess the judge decided that even though he might be a low-flight risk, he was going to make it tough on him by hitting him in the wallet, but Kiddo called the bluff.
Where did he get $250,000?
It was a blanket bond from one of that bunch down in Cheyenne. Liberty bail bonds.
Libby Troon? Hard to believe she'd pop for that without a percentage as collateral.
He picked up a square card and tried to hand it to me. I've got her number here. You could call her up and ask her who's fronting for Billy.
No, she doesn't care for me very much.
She's contacted me and Henry about freelancing as bounty hunters for a few of her skip jobs, and we've never bit.
You could tell her it involves a murder case.
That is the last piece of information I'd want Libby Troon to have. I looked out front and could see Chief Nutter herding some bikers away from the annex building.
Who picked him up? Nobody. He just walked out and disappeared down the street.
So you think he's still around?
No, he said he was done with the rally and heading home. He also mentioned a lot of stuff about suing you, your dog, me, the city, the county, and all the fish in the Belfouche River.
So do you really think he went home?
It's likely.
What's the address?
He stared at me. I'm not hunting him, I just might be able to get a piece of evidence from his next-door neighbor whose lawnmower he may have shot.
He stared at me some more.
You're kidding.
I wish I were. Address, please?
He clicked on the computer and wrote it down on a post-it, and handed it to Vic, who was closer.
It's actually a nice part of town. From what I could tell, it was his mother's.
Vic stuffed the piece of paper in her shirt pocket.
I'm sure she'd be proud.
We walked out just as Nutter Butter shooed away the bikers and turned to look at us.
As one professional to another, have you lost your mind?
I'm not so sure I had one to begin with, but thanks for adding me to your professional circle.
He lowered his voice.
A dead federal agent in my annex building?
We weren't sure where else to put him, or the car.
You know, this shit seems to follow you wherever you go.
It's an interesting life.
Vic and I leaned against the front grill of the monstrous MRAP.
If you're not nice to me, I won't tell you how to start your truck.
He ignored me and continued.
Plus, the entirety of the Division of Criminal Investigation are back there.
I didn't think you wanted to handle that part.
I don't want to handle any of it.
I nodded toward the annex.
One of ours is dead.
The chief calmed down and took a deep breath as I continued.
Somebody in your town killed him. And I think it has to do with Bodaway Taurus. Now, you know as well as I do that if we keep this quiet, whoever did it is going to start worrying, and then they're likely to do something stupid as opposed to doing the smart thing, which is loading up and getting the hell out of here. So you tell me what you would have done differently.
It's a hell of a mess.
And our job.
He sighed.
You think that turd Kiddo had something to do with this, then?
Yep, but I'm still trying to figure out where he came up with the bail money.
TV, I guess. You think he's got ties in Cheyenne, too?
No, it's just that Liberty Bail Bonds is the only one with pockets deep enough for a surety bond like this, and it just happens to be located in Cheyenne.
He shook his head, and we all sat in the bumper of the military vehicle in a dejected fashion.
Must be a lot of money in fixing up motorcycles on TV.
He does have some other rather odd preoccupations.
He turned to look at me.
Like what?
The back room of his cycle shop looks like a bunker for the Nazi Rotary League. He absorbed that one for a while, started to say something, then stopped and started again.
How the hell did you find that out?
Broke in last night and had a look-see.
He stood, took two paces, and turned to look at me.
You really have lost your mind, haven't you?
He glanced at Vic.
You want to talk to your boss here?
She shrugged. I'm usually not a calming effect.
What if they had caught you in there?
I made a noise between my compressed lips. They did.
What?
Well, Earl Engelhart did.
Is there anybody else that doesn't know what's going on here besides me?
No, I think you're about it. He closed his eyes.
Hey, do me a favor.
Sure.
Let's pretend like this little conversation didn't happen, so that I can go back to being as dumb as I have pretended to be.
I laughed, unable to help it.
You're going to pretend that you're oblivious enough to not know that a dead federal agent and an entire field laboratory from DCI have set up shop next door to your office? He took a deep breath and hooked his thumbs into his Sam Brown.
I'm about a year and a half from retirement, Sheriff Longmire, and you'd be amazed at the lengths I'm willing to go to secure the stupidity I have acquired.
I stood up. Consider yourself untold, then.
Good.
He nodded down the street. I am now on my way to the Pondo for lunch, if you two would like to join me. Thanks, but I think we're going to go listen to a new CD I've got.
Who's on it?
You don't want to know.
Roger that.
He started to walk off, but then paused.
Just so we're clear, if this turns out to be the case of the century, I'm going to want back in and with full credit for how magnificently I coordinated the whole thing.
Of course. He waved and turned his back on us in more ways than one, disappearing into the crowded street. I turned to Vic. The Brotherhood of Blue.
No shit.
She glanced behind her.
What the hell is this thing I'm sitting on?
It's an MRAP, or Mine-Resistant Ambush-Protected Vehicle, the centerpiece of the Hewlett Police Department's motor pool.
You're shitting me.
Nope. I pulled the DCI envelope from my jacket pocket, and believe it or not, it has a CD player. Fortunately, Chief Nutter hadn't seen fit to remove the keys from the Pequod, probably because even with the keys, most people wouldn't know how to start the damn thing. The CD player was proving to be almost as difficult. Where do you suppose the volume is? She studied the dash along with me. Maybe the key needs to be turned to accessory?
I thought it was.
She glanced around the cab of the oversized military vehicle.
Why in the world would this thing have a sound system?
Nutter ordered it with all the bells and whistles. She reached overhead to a console and a button that read audio and flipped the switch.
Wonder what this does?
Her voice echoed off the building in front of us as the PA system projected her words over the valley.
Oh, shit!
Which also carried through town. I reached up and flipped the toggle switch. I don't think that's it. I looked at the dash again. How about I just stick the thing in and see what lights up?
Always been my method of operation.
I ignored the remark and looked for the slot where the disc might be inserted, finally seeing what could have easily been mistaken for a design element. The slot accepted the CD and it slowly disappeared. She lodged her feet up on the dash, her Doc Martens in their usual position.
That it?
That or I just lost the only copy we've got. There was a popping noise and then someone counting, 1, 2, 3, testing, 1, 2, 3. I listened to make sure the PA system was off.
This is Agent Brady Post of the ATF recording a meeting with C.I. Apelo concerning the activities of the Trade Train Nomads and specifically Bodaway Taurus and Operation Bad God.
There was some scrambling and then the mic switched off.
Who the fuck is Apelo?
More important, what's Operation Bad God? The mic came back on and this time there were voices in the background along with some music and ambient noises, probably a bar from the sound of it. Brady's voice was low, as if speaking to someone confidentially.
So I need a meet.
The next man also spoke quietly, but his voice was powerful, with just a touch of an unidentifiable accent.
No way. Hey, I don't work for anybody I never met, man. He don't meet people.
What, he's a fucking hermit?
Yeah.
There was a pause.
Look, B-Way wants me in on this, but without knowing where the juice is coming from, don't do it then.
Another pause.
Look, I want in, but I just want to know who I'm in with, you know? I read you, brother, but it ain't going to happen.
There were more noises, and I assumed the other man was adjusting himself in his chair or in the booth or whatever it was.
This is on a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
Post mumbled something indiscernible.
Hey, there's no need to disrespect me, motherfucker. Fuck you, asshole.
There was more fumbling around, and then the unmistakable sound of the slide mechanism on a semi-auto being pulled back.
Hey, man!
The voice became louder, and I was pretty sure the man was leaning in very close.
Let me explain the situation. B-Way works for us, and he says you're the real deal, but we don't know that now, do we?
B-Way and me go back long before Bird City. Dude, I don't care.
There was another pause, and then the noise of the safety being engaged and the gun being put away.
You don't get to meet the man, and that's it.
There was some more noise, and then the mic cut out.
Okay, we need to know what Operation Bad God is, and who Apelu is, for starters.
Well, the original name for Devil's Tower was Bad God Tower, so it might just be a geographic reference to this area. There were more noises from the sound system, so I hurried the rest. Taurus is supposedly Apache, so this Apelu might have been one of his buddies. The noise on the CD subsided, and there were mumblings, but not much else, when suddenly we could hear Post's voice.
Well, I gotta go to the can.
We could hear him walking before closing what I assumed was a bathroom door.
Shit, shit, shit.
There was more fumbling and then a sudden noise that sounded like a window opening.
Shit, shit, shit.
Vic glanced at me. What the hell? More undefinable noise and then nothing. After a moment, there was a rhythmical sound. What is that? It took me a moment to place it, but then I laughed.
Frogs.
We sat there listening to the croaking. He ripped off the mic and dropped it out the window. Near the river, I'd say. We sat there as the frogs croaked, and I could feel a little ennui overtaking me. How long does this shit go on? I adjusted my seat back and pulled my hat over my face.
Let me know.
More than an hour, I listened to croaking frogs. I yawned.
Nothing else?
No, just the sounds of the recently departed coming back to fetch his wire. Well, whoever it was, he must have made him plenty nervous. I flipped off the accessory switch, checking the battery levels first to make sure I hadn't killed the Hewlett Police Department's apocalyptic auto. There wasn't a lot on that recording.
No.
She studied me.
Now that you're rested, what's next?
We need to go see if we can find anything about where Post was staying. He mentioned the Pioneer Motel to the north of town. She pulled the handle and began the long climb down. Did he mention a room number? Hopping out myself, I reached up, shut the door, and met her at the front of the Pequot. No, but I'm betting DCI has already found a key on his person. Her eyes came back to me as she shook her head.
Pequot? Really?
It's big, it's white, and it seemed appropriate. After retrieving the motel's magnetic key card, we borrowed Chief Nutter's vehicle and drove south a quarter mile to the Pioneer Motel.
Couldn't we have walked?
I shut the door and headed toward the pleasant-looking strip of rooms, only slightly blighted by the bikes and bikers littering the parking lot. I didn't think you liked walking.
I don't, but geez, this seems a little like overkill.
She stopped by the office and turned to look at me.
How are we playing this? I mean, if we just go over and walk in, isn't anybody involved going to be suspicious?
We'll just flip the place and look around, and maybe there'll be something else we might find along the way.
There's this thing called a warrant and inadmissible evidence.
She sighed and followed me into the office, the doorbell tinkling from the facing.
Howdy.
A middle-aged woman looked up from reading the Rapid City Journal.
Sorry, we're full up through the rally.
We're not looking for a room to stay in. We were just wondering if you might know which room this key goes to. She took it from me and examined it.
No way to tell. We just punch in the room number and then slide it through and encode it magnetically.
I took the key back. You wouldn't happen to have a room registered to a gentleman by the name of Brady Post? She opened an honest-to-goodness file box and pulled a card out.
Room number 12 on the end out there.
Do you mind if we take a look? She stared at her paper again and then at me.
Well, I don't know who he is, but it can't be good if Sheriff Walt Longmire is looking for him.
She turned the Rapid City paper around and held it up for me so that I could read the feature article about the progress of the Save Jen campaign and the High Plains Dinosaur Museum, along with an enormous photo of me. Chapter 12.
That case was a good 2.5 months ago. What the heck are they doing running an article on it now?
Vic continued to read the borrowed paper.
It's more about the addition to the museum than the case. More to the point, where'd they get this really hideous photo of you?
I ignored her and slipped the card into the electronic mechanism, watched as it blinked from red to green, and pushed the door open. I have, in my time as the father of a teenage daughter, seen scenes of chaos and anarchy that no man should ever witness. And this was another of those. The furniture was turned over with the bed pushed against the wall, clothes and personal effects everywhere. Pictures had been thrown on the floor and the closet doors had been pulled from the sliders. Vic peered in after me.
So you think they were looking for something?
I tipped the mattress from the wall for a look behind it, just making sure there weren't any bodies lying about, and then leaned it back. Where do you want to start? She stepped over a pile of clothes and put the newspaper on a windowsill.
Can we rent a backhoe?
Carrying the larger pieces of furniture outside onto the sidewalk under the curious eyes of the bikers coming and going from the parking lot, we finally got to where we could move around in the place without tripping. Vic started by going through the clothes that were scattered all over the room, making a pile in the corner with the ones that she had examined, as I went through the drawers in the closet.
This was a real toss. If they found what they were looking for, it wasn't until the end of the search.
I felt along the top shelf of the closet under a blanket. Whatever it was, they were looking hard. There was a noise at the door, and we turned to find a drunk biker in a leather jacket and do-rag standing in the doorway with a bottle of beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other.
Hey, what are you guys doing in Brady's room?
Straightening up a little, I glanced around and then studied him.
Somebody trashed the place.
He nodded.
Yeah. Why'd they do that?
Probably looking to see if the tags were still on the mattress.
Do they still check those?
I ignored the question. Were you here when the place got torn up? He threw a thumb.
2 doors down.
What time?
Late, after midnight.
What do they look like?
I don't know. Couple of guys in black polo shirts. One of them was really big.
Bigger than me?
Yeah. Hey, are you guys cops?
I ignored this question, too. What about the other one? He leaned against the door jamb.
He was smaller, but still a big fucker.
What do they look like, other than their size?
I don't know.
I thought you said you saw them.
Well, for a minute, I mean, I wasn't wearing any clothes, and there was all this noise, so I stuck my head out the door and yelled. But they told me to shut the hell up and disappear, or they were going to stuff me in a trash can.
He thought about it.
And it was dark.
How do you know, Brady? He shrugged.
We had a beer out here at the picnic table a couple of nights back.
I nodded, figuring I'd gotten as much out of him as I was going to get. What's your name? He deposited the cigarette into his beer bottle, then stuck out his free hand.
Gogo.
Gogo?
George Lance, but everybody just calls me Gogo.
I shook the hand and gave him one of my cards.
Nice to meet you, Gogo.
Walt Longmire, Sheriff of Absaroka County. He studied the card.
Cool.
If you think of anything else, you might let us know.
Sure.
He pushed off the door facing and disappeared.
You want to know what's amazing about that exchange?
I turned to look at her. What's that?
That you actually had cards.
She went back to sorting through Brady's personal effects.
What phone number have you got on there anyway?
The office number. She mumbled something. I wasn't sure what it was, but I figured that it wasn't complimentary, and went back to searching. I'm checking the bathroom.
I'll alert the press. You want some reading material?
There's a lovely article in the paper on the sill you can wipe with.
Thanks. I don't plan on being that long.
Thinking it was a heck of a lot easier to search for something when you knew what it was you were searching for, I went into the bathroom. Knowing that the space for contraband on motorcycles was relatively small helped, but not much. I opened and closed the medicine cabinet and tried not to look into my tired eyes in the mirror. The shower curtain had been torn off the rings, and the towels were on the floor. After checking the back of the toilet, I piled the stuff on the seat and looked in the shower stall, the trash can, and on the windowsill. Nothing. I was about to turn and walk out when one of those old-fashioned ceiling fixtures with a rectangular glass shade caught my eye. I had had one just like it when I was a kid, with cowboys roping from horses painted on the inside of the surface. But there was a small, shaded square in one corner on this one that didn't match. I carefully stepped up on the toilet in the hopes that I wouldn't rip it from the floor, and unthreaded the nut on the bottom of the shade, palming it so that I could pluck out the strange item. I put the shade back on and looked at the small object. It was a plastic cube of some sort, khaki in color and about 2 inches square. If it was a box, I had no idea how you would open it, since there were no ridges, creases, or cracks. "Hey, Vic," I came out and offered the thing to her. "Any idea what this is?" "A ring box?" I handed it to her. "Open it." She turned it in her fingers, just as I had, and then weighed it in her palm. "It's plastic, but heavy." She examined it closer. "Where did you find it?" "In the light fixture." "No way it's part of the thing?" "No. And it's a strange color, if it's for any kind of construction." She handed it back to me. "A Rubik's Cube for morons?" "I have no idea."